The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
1490 WGCH. This is Carrie Lutz. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. Back with me again, Martin Armstrong, one of the foremost authorities on the world economic order, or shall I say disorder at this point. Martin, how are we doing?
Fine. How you been?
Great. Your last appearance really went over big. We got tens of thousands of downloads, and I'm really glad that you could find the time to get back with us. I know you just got done with a conference in Philly that you were standing room only, sold the place out, and so the word's getting out, huh?
Yeah, well, I was very shocked, but... normally we tried to do conferences, keep them about 100, 125 people, and this was, we had to go up to 300, and we had to turn another 365 down, and it was just amazing. I mean, I think it's definitely a reflection, not so much of me, but I mean, it's a reflection of the times that we're in.
Yeah, and those times that we're in right now, what's your diagnosis and your prognosis for the euro? Because I believe that everything that's in the paper, everything in the media is pure disinformation. It's just noise. It's not telling us what's really going on.
Well, I think that, what all my political sources in Europe, and you have to understand, there's probably, I would say, maybe about 5 to 7% of the people that are in government are good guys. They know what's happening. They really do want to, try and change things. But they are a very small minority. Mm-hmm. But of that type of category, the politicians that I have over in Germany have flat out right told me that when it comes to the choice, and they believe Germany is going to be forced into a choice, and that is that you either, you let the euro completely collapse, or you inflate. And mm-hmm. they said Germany will go with the inflation.
What choice do they really have? Do you think that Merkel wants to be known as the person that let Europe collapse, that destroyed the euro and caused a worldwide banking panic? So they kick the can down the road. In another year, she'll be out of office. It'll be somebody else's problem, right?
Well, that's an interesting issue, because the coalition government there, they realize if they went to elections right now, they'd be thrown out. The situation in Germany is that land is selling like crazy. You cannot buy firewood. People are actually stockpiling because they think the end of the world is coming. It's amazing. There are firewood in the country sold out.
Really?
This is coming directly from German friends of mine. They just flew in this weekend. And it's that bad. And the polls in Germany are so against what Merkel is doing. They would rather see the euro just completely collapse. So you have to understand, we're in America, everything we do, stimulating it, etc., is based upon our experience with the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're afraid of it going down that, down the rabbit hole. And where in Germany, their worst nightmare was the hyperinflation.
Right.
So from their perspective, they're always austerity, stuff like this, don't do that. So for me to say, look, they will have to inflate, is means you're going to have to completely reverse your thinking process there. And that's going dramatically against the culture of the people itself. And it would be like us saying, no, we're not going to stimulate anything. We're going to contract everything. And everybody goes to unemployment. We don't care.
Yeah. So everybody's fighting the last war. What we really need is a new system, right? I mean, this system is reached the end of the line.
Completely. I mean, it is, it's politicians constantly trying to put band-aids on things to keep the status quo. And the euro, when it was forming, the people that were researching to do it, they came to my sessions in London 3 times. And I think I least managed to get them from this idea that the initial idea was that there was going to be one interest rate for Europe and that would be it. And I told them, look, the only way you can do that is if you also have a national debt, not, all these different 17 countries. And
yeah, they didn't want to do that.
They felt they could not get that part through, that it would be perceived as a bailout for the weaker economies. And I told them, you're crazy. This thing's going to blow up. And the problem that, it's not that I'm clairvoyant or something. Really, you can talk to anybody who's a serious trader. And this is the problem. The academics don't understand, and the politicians don't understand. We're going to look at it from a trading perspective and say, okay, fine. Well, I don't have the currency, but if I sell the bond, it's the same thing. Plus, I get additional interest for it. Mm-hmm. So, we live in a world of derivatives. And if I can sell, if you're going to allow actually each country to issue its bonds, it's still in one currency, that's fine. But now I can pick and choose and just short the bonds of Greece or Italy or Spain, which is the same thing as the currency.
Right.
So they never really created a single currency.
Mm-hmm.
It was transferred from the currency markets to the bond markets, that's all.
Right.
And, this is standard procedure. You look at from Argentina, any of them. Any trader would do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even something that I had to come up with this brilliant theory or something. If they asked anybody on a dealing desk, all right, take the names off the instruments. Would you sell this if this was did that? Of course.
Yeah, there was really no way it could work. And being a debt-based currency, when you're issuing sovereign debt, you're creating currency anyway, right?
Yeah, and what makes it worse is that just as they were trying to get one interest rate for all of Europe, and I said, if you do that, I doubt this whole thing is going to work for more than 3 months. It's going to blow itself apart. So I got them at least away from that part. But can you imagine if all 50 states in the U.S., the debt that they issued becomes the reserve for the banks and posted at the Fed? What chaos would we have?
Hey, we got plenty of chaos now, and that isn't the case.
That would be unbelievable.
Because then they can print their own money, and
exactly.
Somebody's got to buy the stuff, regardless how dubious the credit quality is. And I think that's what people don't understand, is that even though there's one currency, like you said, with all these different countries issuing their own debt, it's effectively multiple currencies because it's...
If you're bearish on Italy, they sold the Italian bonds.
Yeah.
You can isolate it out.
Mm-hmm.
Where if it was one national debt, you can't do that. In the United States, if you're bearish on California, you have to sell California's bonds. You don't sell the federal bonds, you sell the California bonds. And so what they were doing was creating federal bonds, but spread around with 17 different issuing authorities.
Unbelievable. And if you look what happened in places like Spain and Greece, they had these tremendous booms brought on by cheap money because their bonds wound up trading as if they were German bonds, right? There was no interest penalty on those bonds. And Spain had this building boom that looks much worse than Miami Beach or just about any place on the planet. So now what's going to happen next is really the question. How do they clean this thing up? Do they just kick the can down the road? What's the new system? Because eventually the new system's going to have to be implemented. Nothing's going to stop it because the world can't live without a monetary system. We got to have a unit of a currency unit so that we can eat, right?
Well, it's going beyond that. And it wouldn't even matter if you made currency conch shells, gold or silver, or, you know, we're back to slave girls that St. Patrick talked about when he went to Ireland. the problem is that governments are simply borrowing. And in the 50s, 60s, even the 40s, the government issued savings bonds. Now, those savings bonds, if somebody's having a kid, you'd go, buy a savings bond, and, oh, when they're 17, they'll be able to, buy a car or something.
Mm-hmm.
But those bonds, if you ever took them down to a bank, they were never allowed to lend on them.
Right.
So, in theory, that's not money then. You can't hypothecate it.
Uh-huh.
But now what happened is that that restriction has been weeded away. So if you want to trade on one of the brokerage exchanges, whatever, and the collateral you put up for the derivative contract, if it's gold or bonds or whatever, you have to put up cash. Well, the cash then stays in T-bills.
Right.
So now you can borrow basically on that, so you can leverage that debt. Then you have, on the international level, you have, China, for example, other countries accumulate dollars. Well, they don't actually have physical paper money sitting in vaults. A paper money supply is only about 6% of the total.
That's a fraction.
Yeah, it's a very small fraction. And so what they have are bonds. So the idea that if you borrow, it's less inflationary than you print, only applied to when we were in a savings bond type thing. Because you could issue the bonds, and yes, it didn't increase the money supply, only because you couldn't use it for something. If you needed the money, you had to sell the bond. So today, you could have your cake and eat it too. So as a result, what the difference is that we have a $15 trillion national debt almost. That really is money now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it is the reserves of banks. It's the reserves internationally of banks. And it's no different than printing. So if we had printed money, instead of borrowing, then grab the World Almanac, the latest one around page 68 or so. It has a national debt, and each year in there, it posts what you paid in interest. If we had printed money, just printed whatever we needed, when we needed it, the national debt would be 68% of it right now is all interest.
Right.
So it would be 40 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been far less if we printed rather than borrowed. Because by borrowing, then we had to pay interest on it.
And who'd we borrow from? The banks that printed up the money, right? They created it out of thin air.
The whole thing.
And loaned it back. It's our own money.
It just multiplies. Mm-hmm. It's like, Fibonacci's two rabbits,
right.
So it's we're beyond the question of what is even money now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, honestly, if we printed it, at least it doesn't pay interest. So it's not multiplying. When you're issuing it in bond form, now you got to pay interest to keep it going. So it's like, I say, just go get the World Almanac, and you'll see 68% of that $15 trillion number has already been paid only to interest to keep it going. So it's not even that that money went to help the poor or something like social, the Democrat versus the Republican argument. It didn't even go there. So it's nice if everybody stands up and says, rich, we're going to make the rich pay. Who's the money going to anyhow? So it's as if you were giving $10 to a charity and you find out $1 went to the poor and $9 went in their pocket.
Sounds about right. So we're in this jam, and eventually I think the debt's become unsustainable, right? if it isn't unsustainable already, it's going to be unsustainable shortly. So then what?
Well, this is what you have to watch. There was a shocking little element a few weeks ago when Germany came to the market with its debt, and they didn't sell it all. Because what's been happening is that initially within Europe, they were selling the Italian, Portugal, Spain, Greece, but they were buying the German, assuming that, okay, fine, the euro is going to last, so I'd rather have the German debt than the Italian debt.
Right.
But now, Germany, at that last auction, didn't sell everything. That is when we're getting close to this point where when does the bubble burst? It's not quantifiable as to an amount of money that's printed, created, or whatever you want to call it. That point of no return, that crossing the Rubicon, as Caesar did, is when you come to the market with debt and you can't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, historically, all the things then fold. So we're getting to that stage, and Europe will, I think, we got some very difficult times in the next 6 months coming. And I think that Germany will end up having to monetize, to agree to inflating its way out, which means that will most likely take place because they won't be able to sell the bonds.
Right, gotcha.
Have to go into printing.
The buyer of last resort, right?
And yeah. It's as if you're writing a check and say, okay, fine, I'm writing a check to myself for $1 trillion, and you take it from your right pocket and you stick it in your left, and you say, now I'm a trillionaire. Very nice. They're issuing debt, and the central bank buys it. So
that's
it's the same thing.
Well, in Kuwait, funny you bring up that analogy of the checks. If you remember, I think it was in the 80s, they had a big crash because everybody was writing post-dated checks for stock and everything else. And they would just circulate these post-dated checks. And eventually somebody tried to cash one of them, and it bounced. And that triggered a cascading collapse. And they had a major crash in their market as a result of post-dated checks. And I think the world's going to see a similar occurrence. And just quickly, MF Global, how does it play into the global collapse? And why did it go south?
Well, MF Global is not unusual. This practice of actually hypothecating clients' money has been going on for at least the mid-80s. I remember having accounts at Drexel Burnham probably early 80 to like 85, 86. And there it was a choice. They said, well, do you want your account sweeped at night? We sell the money at night. You will pay X, Y, Z. They used to ask you.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
Sometime after 85, 86, that kind of disappeared. And the problem is that then they bounce everything back and forth. I just posted a thing on our website about this, trying to put as much detail behind this as possible, because the press generally doesn't understand. But there's no limitation to the amount of leverage off these assets in London versus New York. So what's happening is that when you sign one of these account statements and you open an account, they don't disclose the fact that they can take your assets and they will immediately ship them off to London. Your physical assets are now over there.
Right.
Then they hypothecate them, and they basically are borrowing against your money, and then they trade with it. And this is normal, okay? This is the way all the banks operate. It's been going on since at least mid-80s without notice. Before then, I personally remember getting notice. So sometime after 85, it has gradually evolved into that. And so the real serious issue here is with MF Global, you have a brokerage house and you have a clearinghouse that's supposed to stand between both sides of a contract.
Right.
And that has not happened. Mm-hmm. The exchange, the CME, which is a clearer for MF Global, is not standing behind their trades. So people's money is frozen everywhere. I've gotten emails from Singapore, from everywhere. People are shocked that they can't. People that weren't even trading, they just had cash on deposit there, holding yeah. their T-bills. This is devastating. This is probably far worse than the euro, although the New York press in particular is not going to divulge all of this because basically all the banks are involved.
Right. And
they're afraid that if everybody understands really what's going on, you know, that could cause a panic. Perhaps.
Game over. Game over. Everyone's wants their money. I remember those sweep accounts. The bank actually came to us and said, oh, this is a great thing. You know, you'll make an extra percent or two a year doing this. Just let us take your money. And we did. And then eventually they, like you said, they don't ask anymore. They just do it.
Yeah, back then in the early 80s, I mean, interest rates have gone up to 17%. You can make some good money. Just, okay, fine, I'll put it. I was trading the repo market back then.
Mm-hmm.
Then when interest rates collapsed, sometime after 85, I don't remember precisely, but little by little, there was no longer disclosure of that.
Right.
And then they just do it, and the money goes into their pocket, and they don't even give you anything for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and theoretically, that money also comes out of the money supply, so the money supply gets understated as a result of that.
Well, it's not even in, doesn't even, it gets worse. I've detailed this pretty good.
Uh-huh.
If you now, let's say you take, you have T-bills, and they're for June 1st. Mm-hmm. You put them into the market, but now the opposite side to take them back is also June 1st. All right? Now what happens is you don't even have to show it, and it becomes off balance. Oh, because it doesn't affect the balance sheet.
Because it's a compensating
thing. Exactly. So this is what's happening with this MF Global. First it starts out, well, $600 million, then $900 million. Then we're up to $1.2 billion that's missing. And the seriousness of this is that the corruption that has proliferated New York City in particular, with the courts and the press and the agencies, I have absolutely good information from somebody inside the SEC that was very concerned because Corzine went down to the SEC and met with Mary Shapiro before the crash, and because there was going to be a rule to prevent them from using clients' money.
Right, I remember that, yes.
And he lobbied against it, and she rescinded it.
Well, she was the one who was knee-deep with Bernie Madoff. She was the one that killed the Bernie Madoff investigations. And in classic Washington ballet kabuki dance, they get promoted. The bigger your failures, the higher you can go in Washington. And on that note, we got to call it an interview, but tell us, where do we find you? And if you take emails, give us your email address.
Basically, you can email me at Martin Armstrong, or the email armstrongeconomics.com. Or let's see, actually, probably the email would be better, just Martin Armstrong Economics at hotmail.com.
Excellent. All right. Hey, thanks for that dissertation on everything that's rotten about the world financial system. There's certainly enough blame and enough risk to go around to everybody.
Yeah, and just watch these two critical issues, because that can bring the whole house of cards down.
And it could happen tomorrow, but my guess is, and I think you called it, they're going to kick the can down the road and go for hyperinflation. What choice do they have? It's inflate or die.
Exactly. You have to inflate your way out or you have to deflate, and I don't think they're going to take the deflation.
No one's got the appetite for that.
Nope.
All right. Hey, great having you on, and we'll touch base with you after the first of the year. Have a great holiday season, as the PC people say, and a happy new year. We'll talk to you then.
Okay. Take care.